something so special starting Adar B'toch Kedushas Beis HaMedrash, the Kedushas HaShira. Let's talk about a little bit about Kedushas HaMikdash. Mitzvah Shem, next week we'll be Marbe B'Simcha, we'll talk about Adar and Purim. This week's Parsha, in Parsha's Truma, we're introduced to the Mishkan, and the first kli that's mentioned, that's constructed, is the Aron. That's the first utensil that's mentioned. Rashi points out in Parshas Pekudei, when Bezalel constructs the Mishkan, he actually does something very different. He doesn't construct Aron first. First, he builds the walls of the Mishkan, and only afterwards does he put the Kelim inside. Why is the Aron mentioned first in Parshas Truma? If Bezalel in his Chachma, Bina, and Das decides to do it in a different order, so the Ramban explains in the beginning of Parshas Truma, Rav Soloveitchik gave absolutely beautiful shiurim about this, that the Migdash is defined with the Torah. Without the Torah, there is no definition of Migdash. So that's why the Aron needs to be first. There's a lot to say about this idea. Lubavitcher Rebbe, emphasis on Zechreina Levracha, Lubavitcher Rebbe used to emphasize the same idea, but said it in a beautiful way, al pi derech Kabbalah. He said there are two Mikdashim. There's a Mikdash Ilah, there's a heavenly Mikdash, and then there's a Mikdash Tata, there's a lower Mikdash. The Mikdash Ilah is Parshas Truma. Chabad, the Rebbe Zechreina Levracha taught, is all about taking the ideal Mikdash and putting it in this world and making it practical. And we need a whole Parshas Pekudei to repeat, Vayakal and Pekudei to repeat the construction of the Mishkan to tell us that there's a special, unique avoda of taking Torah's ideals and making them practical. The only difficulty that the Rebbe did not, from my knowledge, expound on, and that's what I'd like to discuss, is why did Bezalel feel the need to construct it with the Mechitzos first? The simple reading of Rashi is hard to understand. Bezalel was an architect, and an architect first puts the Mechitzos. Is that all that Rashi is saying? Or is there something deeper in the difference between a Migdash Ilah and a Migdash Tata? Maybe we could suggest that there's a very important mussar, a very, very important yesod, and a tremendous challenge for us. The world, our world, our Mikdash Tata'a that we're trying to create here in the Kedusha space of Medrash, is a mixture of Kedusha and Tumah. It's a mixture of Amuna and Kfira. It's a challenge. The Breslover Hasidim have a fascinating memra. There was a Breslover Chassid that used to, you know, we see them sometimes in the old city, walk out of his house every day and say, Hashemu Elokim. And there was a kofer who lived next door and said, no, not true. Every day you walk out, Hashemu Elokim. One day he screams out, he says, Hashem, I need Parnasa. So the kofer overhears him and he goes out and he buys him that Shabbos meal, those three Shabbos meals, and he puts them out the door. Guy opens the door and he says, Hashem, you answered my tefillas. The kofer jumps out from the shrub. He says, it's not Hashem. I was the one who bought it for you. So the chassid says, not only did Hashem give it to me, but he even had the kofer pay for it. So there, from the perspective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything works. Down here, there's a confusion. And maybe the yesod is that in the Mikdash Ilah, where there's all Kedusha, so then, there's no need for Mechitzas. Everything makes sense. But over here, to create a Mikdash, then there's a requirement, and a holy requirement, at times for us to create walls. We live in a virtual world, and a big techie told me, filters are virtual walls. And Rabosai, Lanias Daiti, both worlds, I don't want to talk about the internet the whole night tonight. But both worlds that I'm familiar with, the modern Orthodox world, and for lack of a better term, the Haredi world, the reaction to the internet was a knee-jerk reaction. In the Haredi world, the moment the internet appeared about, I remember this vividly, 8-9 years ago, Ramat Beit Shemesh, signs went up, internet is asur. No one keeps to that today. On the other hand, I'm not going to name the place, but it'll be quite evident, presumably, to most of you who I'm talking about. There was a very special yeshiva of mine that put absolutely no restrictions, filters on the computers. And I turned to one of the top officials in that such important university, the flagship of modern Orthodoxy, and I said to him, I have beautiful Talmidim, no worse than the best boys that are sitting here. And I know that they've fallen into pornography. And the response was, our approach is we let the boys choose. There are certain things that are so powerful that we need to construct mechitzos for. And without real filters, without real mechitzos, then ultimately any kedusha that we try to create is not going to last. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that mechitzos, in his tshuva, mechitzos in a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash, is to separate us from Kalas Rosh. There are certain things that Torah doesn't mix with. I have to repeat what I saw one time when I was a young man, and that is people sitting in front of a television watching, I don't remember whether it was a sitcom or a sport game, and studying for the Gemara Bechina. Hayitachein? There's Kedusha, and then there's Chol. And there's a place where we need to construct mechitzos. There's no way that a person could sit and learn and attain madregas in Kedusha in a Beis HaMedrash that's quote-unquote co-ed. The two things don't exist. You can't have Torah in a co-ed Beis HaMedrash. That's darga number one of mechitza. Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuvas describes that the mechitza is there to prevent from Kalas Rosh. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal had a different take on the halacha of mechitza. He pointed out, and this was a big deal between Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik, I'm not talking the halacha of the maisa part, but I want to drive at certain points in Musar in understanding the requirements of mechitza in the Migdash Tata'a. He pointed out that when it comes to building Kedusha, there's an extra chiyuv, a makom of Torah, there's an extra responsibility that every single person has to make sure that when it's initially built, it's pure. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, when he built the yeshiva of Volozhin, did not only build yeshivas Volozhin. He built almost every single European yeshiva that exists today. Even many Sephardic yeshivas are modeled after the yeshiva of Volozhin. Listen to the description of Rabbi Itzel of Volozhiner, Reb Chaim's son. Our yeshiva's founding took place at the founding of yeshiva's Volozhin. Kisha Abba Iniach es Evin Apino li yeshiva Seinu. When our father put down the cornerstone of yeshiva's Volozhin, Hayakula Maled Charoda Bo Bayom. There was a tremendous trepidation. There was a tremendous Yiras Aromimus. V'lo ha'od shebocha, he cried. Oz v'hizil d'mos achloi, etzorech b'mayim l'gabel et ha'chomer. There were so many tears from Reb Chaim that they didn't need water to mix the cement. And Reb Itzel Aponovitcher goes on, and he says that there were other yeshivas that he felt that they didn't sense the trepidation of building a makom amigdash, of creating those necessary mechitzas, and those yeshivas, in his experience, failed. Whenever a person builds something of Kedusha, there has to be a tremendous pachad. A tremendous pachad that the appropriate mechitzas are being put up. And that pachad is not only in regards to mechitzas. When Reb Chaim Volozhiner came to the Gra and he asked him about starting the yeshiva of Volozhin, He was very excited about the idea, and the Gra said no. Reb Chaim Volozhiner came back to him a few years later. Again, it wasn't only that yeshiva, it was this yeshiva too. He came back to him a few years later, and the Gra said, an absolutely beautiful idea. Reb Chaim asked him, Rebbe, what changed? And the Gra said, I felt that there was a certain amount of excitement that you had, that it could very well be that there was a little part of Shelo Lishma that was involved. And I wanted to make sure that you were humbled beforehand, thought it through again and again and again, before the Eim HaYeshivas, the mother of all yeshivas, was created. Rabosai, whenever we start a Makom of Kedusha, the basis of it, the foundation, if there's any crack, if there's something that's missing, then a crack in the foundation begins to get deeper and deeper, and ultimately what seems to be a small issue becomes a very, very large issue. Let me give you a beautiful example of how Gedolei Torah had forethought and foresight to be able to anticipate problems in creating Kedusha. Did anybody ever see in America anybody drive after Shkia? Shomer Shabbos people? Baruch Hashem, no. What's the earliest time that people make Havdalah on Matzah Shabbos? About 40 minutes in New York City. That's the earliest. There were places in Europe, I'm not going to even mention the names, they'll become obvious, where it's well known that they followed Rabbeinu Tam and they did Malacha after Shkia. There were other places who followed the opinion of the Gra and they did Malacha about 15, 16, 18 minutes after Shkia. They made Havdalah. There was a monumental meeting between the Satmar Rav Zatzal and Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. And in that meeting, they anticipated that there would be a tremendous, in America everything was new. And they agreed on two things. The Satmar Rav agreed that he would tell his Kehillah not to do Malacha after Shkia on Erev Shabbos. And Rav Moshe Feinstein agreed that he would set down a Shita that Malacha should be done Be'erech 40 minutes after the Shkia. You're young. Many of you are thinking to yourselves, I'm not Reb Chaim Volozhiner, but Rabosai, there are people here who are going to build Torah, but do it with a pachat. Someone called me up from a secular university where they're trying to introduce things into a Beis HaKnesses, which is not Aliba LaMesorah. When it comes to building Kedusha, a makom of Kedusha, there are absolutely no psharas. There are no compromises. But let's go to the most important Musar of it all. There's a beautiful memra that we have in our Mesorah. Says the Nevesh HaChaim, you think that this makom HaMikdash, that's the holiest place in the world? Wrong! There's a place that's holier. This is the heart of the world, the heart of the physical world. The heart of the Mikdash Tata. But you know where the heart of the spiritual world is? It's here. It's here and it's there. It's in the heart of every single Jew. And the Nevesh HaChaim says that a mitzvah and kedusha that we put on our heart is greater than the kedusha of the Kohen Gadol B'Kodshei HaKadoshim, and Chas V'Chalila Aveira in our heart is greater than an Aveira B'Kodshei HaKadoshim. The most important Binyan HaMikdash is the Binyan HaMikdash Bilvavi Mishkan Evneh, is the Mikdash in your heart. And that means that when we start, like Reb Chaim Volozhiner described, the most monumental work in your life is not going to be the beautiful shul that you build, or the beautiful chesed organization that you build, or the beautiful yeshiva that you're going to build. It's going to be the beautiful heart that you build. That has the greatest kedusha. That has the greatest kedusha. And that requires a tremendous pachad every single time a person starts. And I want to talk about three areas. Already to start thinking about next year, how many times do I speak to a Talmud in the beginning of Elul? I know it's a little early, but I don't think it's too early. And I say to him in the beginning of Elul, or maybe at the end of Av, Whose shir are you going to be in next year? Who's your chavrusa? Maybe the most important, who's your roommate going to be? You're building the Evan Hapina. You're building the Evan Hapina for the rest of your life, the Migdash of your heart. And Rabosai, every single person here could be someone who's a master of Torah. I'm not saying going to be the biggest lamdan in the world, but every single person sitting in this room could learn two Mishnayos a day. And that means in a few years you'll finish fast Mishnayos. And once you do it once, you'll be able to do four Mishnayos a day. And then when you're at the age of 40, then you'll be able to start Daf Yomi. And then you'll be able to do Shas, not in 7.5 years, in 3 years. Aside from all the Iyun that you're going to do, Be'ezer Hashem. I know I'm setting the bar high, but I think many a Talmidim here could do it. There's another part in your heart that's going to be extremely important for you to work on. Of course, we can't have Musar Shem without talking about girls, right? How do you start dating? Some people go into dating and they haven't prepared, they haven't thought. They look at it as speed dating. They size up the girl in 20 minutes and that's it. I'm going to say something that is actually based on a Maisa Shahaya. There's a fellow who decided, you know, he was just interested in checking out the girl and decide whether she was Shaykh. Then, you know what Shaykh means. Shaykh means how she looks. And then he was going to find a way to end the date, to end the date early. So he has his friend calling him 30 minutes into the date, and he hangs up, and he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, my friend told me my aunt died. I'm going to have to go home," because their plan was a half hour in, he already was going to decide, and then he's going to get out of there if he wasn't interested. So the girl turns to him and says, "Wow, that's a relief. If your aunt hadn't died, then mine would have also had to have died." But Rabosai, behind that joke is something that's deeply problematic. Very deeply problematic. And that is the chisaron that people have in terms of looking at what's really, really important in life. So how you start dating, how you're going to perceive it, is going to affect your marriage, and that's going to affect the way you raise your children as well. Starting off your marriage right is absolutely so, so, so important. That's the Evan Pina that Reb Chaim Volozhiner is talking about. You know, I had a Talmud that told me, he called me up about a couple weeks into his marriage, and he said to me, "Rebbe, I have the following problem." He said, "The girl that I'm married to, she's a great girl." And I'll tell you what happened. The first Thursday night, she called me over. By the way, this guy is a big Talmud Chacham today, a young big Talmud Chacham today. She called me over, let's call him Reuven, and she says, "Reuven, I'm going to be cooking in the kitchen. And I just want you to know, I don't want to disturb you when you're learning, but I'm cooking in the kitchen." Tov. He's sitting and he's learning, and he finished the sugya. He finished his goals of what he wanted to do today. So he went over and he said to her, let's call her Leah. She says, "Leah, I'm done finishing learning. Can I help you in the kitchen?" She says, "Oh, I'm up to the kugel." He says, "I'll help you with the kugel." Sure enough, he knew how to cook a kugel. And he begins to help her cooking the kugel. And they made the kugel for that Shabbos. You know, it reminds me, they say there was a genie who came over to a woman. And he says to her, "I'll grant you one wish." So the woman says, "Okay, this is a really sincere girl." So she pulls out this big map. And she says, "You see this map of the world?" She says, "You see all these countries?" She points to Europe and to Africa. And she says, "My wish is that they stop fighting with each other, that there should be no more wars." So the genie looks at the map and he says, "They've been fighting for thousands of years. I don't think I could give you that wish." He says, give me another wish. She says, "I'm looking for a guy who cooks and doesn't watch sports all day." And the genie says, "Give me that map again. I'd rather go with the first one." So this guy does something beautiful. And he says to her, "I'll help you with the kugel." Tov? The Talmud tells you, this is a true story. The genie one, I'm not sure, but this one's a true story. Talmud tells me, and next week, he's sitting and learning, and he's stuck in the sugya. And you should know, this guy knows most of Shas now. He learned here in this base medrash. That's the most I'm going to say. He's not sitting in this room. So he was, he knows most of Shas now. He's a big Talmud Chacham. He calls, we speak about a month into his marriage, and he tells me, Rebbe, what happened was the next week I was stuck in a sugya, and my wife said, Reuven, can you help me in the kitchen with the kugel? So he said, of course, he's a Baal Midos. He got up immediately, and he went to help her. The third week, the same thing happens. She calls and she asks him for the kugel. He said, Rebbe, the first time I offered to do the kugel, I didn't expect that this was going to be a lifetime investment, that I'm always going to be helping the kugel, especially when it's a tough sugya, where you're baking the sugya. It's not the same thing as baking the kugel. So I told Reuven, every single kugel that you bake now in your initial years is 50 dapim. Or, if you're the guy in the genie thing, it's a full day of football from the pregame until the last chazara on ESPN at midnight. Every single kugel. What's the pshat? This is all about how you start. What is a woman looking for in a guy? Not what the joke, the Reader's Digest joke says. What she's looking in a for in a guy in a Ben Torah is someone who shows that what she is doing is important to him and he wants to help. And the moment she feels that he's on her team, that he would want to help, then I told him the odds are that she's not going to ask you for very many kugels. I said, in 5 years from now, the odds are you're not going to be cooking kugel on Thursday nights. Rabosai, I saw him 2 weeks ago. He now knows most of Shas. I said to him, how many kugels did you cook? He said to me, it stopped after the first month. But Baruch Hashem, we have a beautiful marriage. How a person starts off showing that he cares and showing that she's important, it turned out it was much more than 50 daf for every kugel. Or it could be 50 games. Whatever is important to you. But how you start off, how you start dating, how you start marriage, how you start as man is going to be absolutely critical. And all of those things sometimes require something that's uncomfortable, and that is putting up mechitzas. Saying to yourself that these are things I do and these are things that I don't. These are things that are acceptable, these are things that are not. This is the Migdash Ilaa, where there's no need for mechitzas, but in this world, the way we construct it is first with mechitzas. And that requires a pachad. That requires the tears of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. B'toch HaSimcha, within the joy, in Purim there's an inyan to cry as well. There's an inyan to cry in one's Torah. I'll never forget, there were boys who cried on Purim, and those tears lasted forever. And that's a crying mitocha simcha. Be'ez Hashem, we should be zeicha to mekadei shem shemayim, to be mekayim truly mishenichnas adar marvim mesimcha, to be able to be zeicha to put down those necessary mechitzas in the Migdash Tatah, and thereby build the most important Migdash, and that's our Migdash Halev.